You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. An amazing, amazing story here. One of the top oil industry officials has threatened the president of the United States politically. The president, is he president? Yeah, the president of the American Petroleum Institute, Jack Girard, said that if Obama didn't approve the XL pipeline quickly, he would face, quote, huge political consequences. We have reached the point in this country where an industry is threatening a sitting president with, you know, we're going to take you out politically. Tell me Citizens United hasn't gone on steroids and gone insane. But there's a larger issue here, too, and that is, you know, the XL pipeline, the oil thing. I read this story recently that suggested that the United States has become, here we are, the Associated Press. For the first time, the top export of the United States, the world's biggest gas guzzler, is, wait for it, fuel. We export a lot of wood products. We export, you know, we're basically a third world nation now. We don't export so many finished goods, but we export a lot of raw materials, a lot of, you know, mining products and coal and things like that. Now our number one export is gas and diesel fuel, refined oil. And, of course, our number one import is oil. So what is going on? Tyler Slocum is the director of Public Citizens Energy Program and an expert on this stuff. And citizen.org, of course, the website. Tyler, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be here.
Great to have you with us. First of all, in my setup for all this, was basically what everything I said accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, what's going on here is that since 2008 and the economic collapse, domestic demand for gasoline has been pretty anemic. It's been pretty flat. At the same time, oil production here in the United States has been at record highs. We're producing more oil today under the Obama administration than we did at any point during the Bush administration.
Is that because of increased offshore drilling or because of fracking?
It's a combination of all.
Finding
increased
new
oil? Offshore and a lot of unconventional oil and sustained high prices for crude.
Yeah.
You have to remember the United States is the third largest crude oil producing nation in the world. Only the Saudis and the Russians produce more than we do. So the combination of record high oil production with flat domestic gasoline consumption has led many refiners to
last week's show there. Just very quickly, Tom Hartman here with you, and we are live where are we? We're in Stockholm, Sweden. Amazing. Let me mute the Skype here. And, Jacob, I am trying to dial you up on Skype right now. Oh, we are connected. Okay, great. Great. And I am live on air, and I'm just going to change the video. So it should look a little better there. Hopefully. There we go. We'll get there, Louise. And I'm going to just cycle the video here. There we go. And I'm sorry, everybody, for the delay here. Doing radio from, even though this time we took an hour to set up, but special thanks to our friends at Silver Lake Audio, who in Florida, who helped get the audio set up and everything. It's really quite extraordinary that this was able to work. Jacob, are you seeing the video of the camera? Oh, okay. Did that do it? Okay, we're good to go. Okay, great. And then let me just get to the show today. Question: I've got a bunch of questions for the day, and I think that these are things that we should all be asking. First of all, Mitt Romney, all these attacks on Mitt Romney, that are being initiated right now by Republicans. And by the way, as I said, we are on the air. It's Thursday, what is the date today? The 12th of January, and I'm here in Stockholm, Sweden, but I've been keeping track of what's going on there. And question for the day, will the attacks that are coming from Newt Gingrich, will they serve to help or hurt Mitt Romney? I mean, is it possible that ultimately these attacks might actually help him? In fact, could it be that the guy who gave Newt Gingrich $5 million to attack Mitt Romney and to continue the attacks of Mitt Romney, might that help him in as much as 9 months from now, 10 months from now, as we go into the election, when these exact same topics come up, he can say, oh, you know, that's old news. It's like you haven't, for example, you haven't heard anybody in the last 6 months talk about, you know, Newt dumping his first wife for having cancer, or the fact that she was his high school teacher when he married her and that he was a teenager, or the fact that his second wife, he was cheating on with his third. You know, none of that stuff has explicitly come out. There have been references to it, vague references to it, but none of it has explicitly come out. So the question, you know, why is it that none of that has come out? Could it be that, you know, everybody just thinks, hey, that's old news. Everybody knows that. So if the Republicans attack Mitt Romney, could it serve to actually strengthen him? This is kind of my, conspiracy theory of the day, I suppose, for lack of a better phrase for it. But it seems to me that that could very much be the case. So that's I've got a couple of questions here. Number one. The second one is capitalism itself in trouble? We had Frank Luntz on Fox News. And, Jacob, you have this clip? Okay. This is Frank Luntz on Sean Hannity's show saying, let's stop using the word capitalism. Karl Marx invented it, which, by the way, is not the case, to the best of my knowledge. But he says, let's pretend that we're not actually Republicans. Here's Frank Luntz.
Conservatives should not be defending capitalism. They should be defending economic freedom.
Right.
And there is a difference. The word capitalism was created by Karl Marx to demonize those people who make a profit.
Right.
We've always talked about the free enterprise system or economic freedom, and suddenly they're trying to defend something that has only 18% support.
So there you go. This is, you know, it's like they're saying, oh, well, you know, let's just like pretend something else is going on. And, Republicans are not going to be in the position to defend capitalism. Well, what are they going to defend? You want to defend the free market? That's Ron Paul territory. I mean, that's even stranger than capitalism. Another point. A lot of us, you know, we've been talking for a couple of years on this show about the United States being at a revolutionary moment, that the Obama election was a revolutionary election, and that for a variety of purposes, the main one being massive, unprecedented Republican obstruction in the House and the Senate, the real revolution never happened, the fundamental change in the way things are going. And in fact, I'd say, you know, even more than that, it was the Supreme Court. They said, hey, corporations and rich people can buy into elections. So everything's cool. So could it be that the reason why people are behind Ron Paul on the right is they think that's the revolution? People with Obama think that that's the revolution. But it could it be that the real revolution is the super rich, that they're basically, you know, taking over and taking down the country? And, for example, in Iceland, we discovered that the super rich are not revealing who they are. They're apparently funding the right-wing party, but the party's refusing to acknowledge it. They're keeping their money in the Caymans, and they're not paying their taxes. Same thing in Greece with the Greeks. So is that like an old story in America?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So back with your thoughts on this. I'd love to get some of your takes. We're going to take your calls, and we're also going to – we'll be right back.
It's not about the money.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So we've got this massive national debt that in large part is the result of two wars that George Bush started and didn't put on the budget, didn't put on the national budget. Barack Obama shifted them onto the budget. So all of a sudden, whoa, look at that debt. Medicare Part D, 2006, the Republicans said, hey, let's give everybody free drugs and let's force the government to pay full retail for these free drugs, which is a $600 billion boon to the pharmaceutical industry. And Billy Towson, running this thing in the House of Representatives, then goes off and becomes the president of pharma at $2 million a year, gets a special exemption to leave Congress early so that he can do that. And that wasn't on the budget. And so now these things are on the budget. So we've got this. And then you've got companies like Bain Financial, for example, that's hiding its money in the Cayman Islands. I'm not making this up. Bain Financial uses the Caymans, among others, as places to hide their money. And so you take that and the various companies that fully a quarter of the companies that Mitt Romney acquired through Bain, they bankrupted, just, you know, totally wiped out. So is it possible that their use of tax havens, the tax cheating, they're destroying companies, they're all these various things that are being done by Bain Financial, as it comes out now with the Republicans coming out and saying, oh, yeah, we got this figured out, is that going to bite them in the butt? Is that going to come back eventually and be the thing that takes down Mitt Romney? Or is it that it's insulating him? So I think it's fascinating. Stuart in Seattle, you have some thoughts on this. Hey, Stuart, thanks for listening.
I have a different take.
KTPK.
Okay.
Go for it.
I have a different take on why Newt Gingrich is attacking Romney. I would bet that it's ultimately rich Obama supporters that funded him and funded that whole circus of clowns that I do not include Ron Paul or even Huntsman in. But the clowns.
We actually know, though, that this guy who's a casino owner in Vegas gave Gingrich $5 million. And funded this 30-minute movie that's a hit piece, and apparently it was done on a cheap budget. It was like a $50,000 budget. And this movie that is a hit piece on Romney, and this guy is a right-wing Republican and has been forever. So that's not a secret.
And Obama is a right-wing Republican. I would remind listeners.
I strongly disagree with that.
Okay, fine. But I would remind listeners.
I mean, by the standards of 1950, maybe, but not by today.
Yeah. Okay, I would remind listeners that Wall Street is happy with Obama. Remember the first thing that Obama did when he got in office?
They are actually not. I'm sorry, Stuart. That Wall Street is very much not happy with Obama right now. In fact, I refer you to several articles in the New York Times right after the Citizens United decision, where a number of Wall Street people came out and said, no more money going to the Obama campaign. They had been a major funder in the previous cycle. And you're seeing all of this money that is going into these campaigns to stop the funding, or even, you know, to block the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Richard Cordray, all those efforts. And in addition to those efforts, you've got the efforts to actually do away with Dodd-Frank. Let's just nuke Dodd-Frank. And these are not things that you do if you're happy with the president and his policies. So, you know, it's a nice story, but I don't believe it. So in Atlanta, Georgia, JJ. Hey, JJ, what's up?
Newt Gingrich has done us a huge favor. And if in fact
that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Now, here he is. He said in his interview yesterday, with Big Ed, he said basically that the right to flip corporations isn't the right thing to do. He said that even though you have the right to buy corporations and sell them off for nothing, doesn't mean that that's the right thing to do. What a tremendous...
But see, that's my point. I mean, you know, when we were doing our show a couple of days ago and we had a call in from New Hampshire, and I said, you know, I'm not going to put the Gingriches on because I think that this is a strategy that they are using very explicitly. And, you know, time will tell if I'm right on this or not.
As I pointed out earlier, nobody's talking about the
past sins of Newt Gingrich right now. Nobody's talking about the past weirdnesses of Rick Santorum. Because once it's happened, our media says, particularly if it got covered by both sides, our media says, oh, that's old history. We're not going to go back to that. Let's talk about what's going on right now.
You're right. Old news is no news. But on the other hand, when you're being given the bullets to put in your gun, you really ought not to leave them at home. Now, you have to realize, too,
in politics, they're not bullets. JJ, I disagree with you. In politics, they're not bullets. What is happening is, time will tell if I'm right or not. And there's no doubt in my mind that some of these things that Newt and the others are doing are going to end up as ads and talking points for the Obama campaign. And I think that that's going to work to our benefit. But the bottom line, the real bottom line, I think, and the reason why now is the time when the Republicans want Romney to be attacked, in my opinion, and why I think that the Republican strategists, the Frank Luntzes of the world, and you can get this, between the lines, if you listen carefully to what these guys are saying, and particularly if you listen to right wing talk radio and to Fox News and whatnot. What's going on between the lines is they're like, let's get as much of this Romney stuff out now. You know, the old saying of crisis management is get it out and get it fast. Get it out fast, right? In fact, Anthony Weiner, his problem, he could have survived that if he had acknowledged on the very first day that he was texting those pictures out. I mean, maybe not, but it certainly wouldn't have been the drawn-out media picture circus that it was. Get it out, get it fast, the guy from Louisiana did when he got busted with a hooker. I mean, just get it out, and he got reelected. And I really think that what's going on right now is the Republicans are loving the fact that all these attacks on Romney are coming out, and they want us promoting them. In fact, because then it'll be old news come November.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And so I'm very ambivalent about carrying the Republicans' water right now. On the other hand, I do think that you and I need to talk. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Sweden. And we're going to, in the second and third hour of our program, we're going to get into what's going on here in Sweden, everything from how they dealt with their banksters to the Pirate Party to I have some questions about Julian Assange and about the meltdown and what Swedish society is like. But in this first hour, I wanted to get this basic American political stuff out and out of the way. Here's further evidence of my hypothesis that the Republicans want Mitt Romney, well, basically that they want Newt Gingrich to get as much coverage as possible, because there's no way he's going to win, right? So the Republicans want Newt Gingrich to get as much coverage as possible. And the reason why is get it out so that it'll be ignored later as we go into the general election. And further proof I offer today, it's being reported right now over Think Progress, Alex Seitzwald, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, who has positioned herself as the voice of the populist wing of the GOP, defended conservative attacks on Mitt Romney. Now, why would she do that? She wants him to be president, right? I mean, he may not be her first choice, but she's an establishment Republican. She's a Fox News commentator. She wants him to be, and called on the presidential candidate to provide proof that his former company, Bain Capital, created 100,000 jobs. I'm telling you, they are playing this the same way Obama played the birth certificate thing. Obama didn't actually release the so-called long-form birth certificate until just a couple of days before Donald Trump showed up at the correspondence dinner so he could just slap it in his face. Optimal impact. Mitt Romney is going to have a response, a Bain response. Some of it, enough of it is going to come out now that the press is going to say, oh, that's old news. That's no big deal. That's just old news. And then before the election, he's going to have even more good news about Bain that's going to come out. And so I'm telling you, anybody who thinks that, by publicizing or promoting Gingrich or any of this other stuff, that they're somehow helping the president, I'm very, very skeptical of that claim. I'm looking at this like a chess game. Let's go a couple of steps out rather than just playing this thing, over the short term. So anyhow, let me pick up some of your calls. By the way, all our lines are busy right now, but if we are being simulcast in Sweden at this very moment, so if any of our Swedish listeners want to try and call into the station, the telephone number in the U.S. is 866-987-THOM, and that's, you can find that on our website at tomhartman.com. However you spell it, we'll get you there. And Joe in Springville, Utah. Hey, Joe, thanks for listening on the XM app. What's up?
Yeah, how cool. I get to talk to Swedish guys.
Yeah.
Hey.
And we're going to have some real Swedish guys on for the next couple hours, but first I wanted to get this out of the way. What's up?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. A friend of mine pointed out that we think through our emotions. Our emotions
yes.
come out first to push us forward to whatever it is we need, food or whatever. And I grew up on small farms. I spent a lot of time in the earth cultures, Indian country, walks around. And it occurs to me that we need to be really forming our own conversation around going back to a earth relationship. I think 30 million small family farms, because that's what I grew up with. And mm-hmm. the emotional range that I had doing that, everything from being with my dog out in the woods and seeing these huge blue cranes landing and right next to me at the pond, you know, it's still...
Joe, I completely agree with you, and that's not germane to this particular conversation, is it?
Well, it is in this regard. What we have for an emotional landscape right now is a money culture emotional landscape that's bringing about all these stupid conversations that we're having, these people that we're seeing. It's because we live emotionally for the money, and so we
right.
live emotionally for anything.
But that's not, you know, Joe, respectfully, that's not going to change in the next 11 months. And so the question, you know, is what's the deal with the agreement or the disagreement? Jeff in Lexington, Mass. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom? I'm actually a conservative Republican, and I wanted to agree with you on your hypothesis. I happen to think that getting all of this stuff out about Bain now is going to benefit Romney, and I'm happy that guys like you are even talking about it now.
Interesting. Very interesting. And that's one of the reasons why, actually, you know, I'm more concerned with this kind of macro picture of how this is going to work rather than the, okay, let me give you the list of three companies that lost their job, you know, all the, cause I'm telling you that stuff, when it comes to the general, it's just like, you know, Clinton's womanizing. You know, he got all these attacks when he was the governor. So by the time he ran for president, he'd already had several attacks. You know, it was like, that's old news. We're not going to talk about it. And the media said, it's old news. And it wasn't until they actually, you know, found a smoking gun that they were able to turn it into anything. And you know, I think that Sarah Palin, that the Republican establishment, they're loving it. And why would a conservative Republican give Newt all this money? You know, of course, Newt is, you know, the narrative is that he's going personal.
You're looking a little bit too deep with the donor to Newt's perspective. I think Newt is just reacting to his the attacks from Iowa.
Sure.
But
he's not the only one doing it, and the rest of them aren't muzzling him.
Fair enough. But, I mean, this still is a relatively open race up until a week ago. So what you have to realize, fair point, but the class warfare argument is not going to work. And when this stuff comes out now, it helps defeat it down the road, which will be easily
defeatable.
Yeah,
see, that's my hypothesis too, Jeff, and I think that you're right on that. And we'll see. We'll see, we'll see where this goes. Rick in Boulder Creek, California. Hey, Rick, what's up? Rick? Okay, no Rick. John in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Listen, I disagree with you. I don't think this is going to inoculate Romney.
I don't think it's going to fully inoculate him. I think all he needs is 10 or 15% inoculation.
Well, I think what it's done, you try to equate it with Gingrich's marital history and Clinton's womanizing and all that. Those issues are not core issues. That, I mean, this plays right into the core debate that's going on in this country, and I think it's going to expand it. Even Romney responded the other day after having criticized the president for his what he did with the auto companies. He says, well, wait a minute, what I did was no different than what the president did with the auto companies. I mean, that's sort of a morph on his part, and I think, you know, this is going to raise the consciousness of some of these Tea Party populists, you know, that see that there is, you know, the debate about benevolent capitalism versus malignant capitalism. And, you know, what kind of country, what kind of economy
see, I think
do we
that,
want?
But I think the debate about what kind of economy do we want and benevolent capitalism versus malignant capitalism is completely lost on the Tea Party types. I think it's way above their heads.
I think
the banksters got a bailout. I lost my job. I'm upset. I want to vote the bums out. And here comes along this guy, Mitt Romney, who's worth millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah, he was born a millionaire. So what? He made a lot of money. And if he knows how to make money, maybe he knows how to run a government. That's the storyline that they're going to run.
And sometimes,
when you make omelets, you got to break an egg. And that's going to be the Romney line come the election time. And right now, it's working to his advantage. The people on the left and on the right and the left are trashing him for being a capitalist.
I think that it's going to have legs, and I think that it's something that the Democrats can use when they come up against.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Greg, listening on AM 1350. That's in New Mexico, right, Greg?
Yeah, Albuquerque.
What's up?
For Christmas, I got screwed by Tom Hartman. It was great.
Oh, I'm glad you got the book. Thank you. And I hope you enjoy reading it.
Second, last call I just touched on this, but I really think the analogy you're looking for is that putting out these news stories now is a vaccination. I mean, if you get your chickenpox shot now, you're not going to be needing it in November.
That's right. That is my hypothesis, and I realize that I'm the outlier on this. I'm not seeing anybody else saying this. In fact, what I'm seeing is everybody being gleeful, you know, Democratic strategists. Thanks, Greg, for the call. Democratic strategists think it's just absolutely wonderful that the Republican Party is melting down. I don't think so much. I really don't think so much. I think that what they're doing is they're setting it up. And anybody who promotes that storyline, in fact, is setting it up for Romney to use this to his advantage. David in Fullerton, we've got a little less than a minute to the break. David, what's up?
Tom, I strongly disagree with your hypothesis. This is what I believe is going on. I think it's just personal with Newt Gingrich. Newt knows he's not going to win, as you said. He's going to go back to selling books and doing consulting. So this is just building his brand. Second,
but see, he's not the only one who's saying these things.
But the second thing,
right across the board,
the PAC money's outside of the leadership's control, and the leadership is furious at him.
And the leadership, you know, may be playing the game of being furious with him, and maybe they're genuinely furious with him because some of his attacks are becoming ad hominem. Although, if they really wanted to go after Romney ad hominem, they'd go after, you know, his grandfather, great grandfather having X number of wives, I forgot how many, or whatever. I don't think that, which it would be the equivalent of, you know, the whole birther thing that the Republican Party endorsed with regard to Obama or the secret Muslim stuff.
Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in just a few moments. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, yeah, I hear a little bit of distortion on the peaks here. I think it might just be the kind of microphone that we're using. But, anyhow, welcome back. What are we doing with this whole Bain Capital, Mitt Romney, Chris in Vernon, New Jersey? Hey, Chris, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Well, back in 2006, Clear Channel was bought by Bain Capital. Clear Channel is one of the single largest owners of radio stations in the country. In 2008, they had a bunch of TV stations that they sold to a company that's owned by Providence Equity Partners. Their senior advisor is the chairman of Citigroup. So Mitt Romney has some big ties to the media. I guess you kind of compare him to Silvio Berlusconi over in Italy. And I mean, he has a lot of friends up there. And I think
companies.
I'm sorry?
He's no longer running those companies.
Right,
Romney no longer is running.
He was at one point, and he has a bunch of friends, and I'm sure pretty close ties to the people that are in there. I mean, it was like George Carlin said, it's a big club. You and I ain't in it. You know? I mean,
yeah. Okay. When we start getting into the conspiracy theory about Bain Capital and Mitt Romney and the media and all this, I really think that what we need to be focusing on right now is the crisis of capitalism, is the 1% versus the 99%, is the fact that the rich in the super rich in the United States, and it's not just in the United States. I just saw this in Iceland. I've seen this. You know, we're learning about this all over the world. In Greece, for example, the super rich, they basically don't pay taxes. They run everything offshore. In the United States, they have become worldwide like they're their own nation. And the transnational corporations are now larger in aggregate than any country in the world, except arguably the United States or the EU. And even there, you could say, no, actually they're larger than all of them. And so it's like there's been this fundamental change in how things are organized and how society is organized and how economies are organized. And frankly, I think it's a disaster. I don't know how to describe it beyond that. Karen in Jackson, Tennessee. Hey, Karen, what's up?
Well, hi. How are you? And hello to all of our Swedish friends.
There you go.
Hello.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
You're on the air.
Sorry.
Yep, just fine. So what's on your mind, Karen?
Well, thank you for the good conversation. I think everyone's making interesting points, and I agree that, about Mitt, the dialogue being run and they're deflecting and deflating, and that's politics. And I also appreciate the conversation about corporations. And you all reminded me of something my father used to say. And he used to say, if you don't understand something, follow the money. And it served me well in life. And I feel that the corporations are the 1%. They're the ones, they don't care, for instance, whether they hurt people or people lose their jobs or whether they pollute the waters and the air until they're dead, and then they don't care. They don't even think about their own children. So they are deflecting, the conversation. And maybe
in fact, by law, they can't.
What?
By law, they can't care about those things. And that's the fundamental change in capitalism that we have to bring about. Karen, thank you for raising those issues. I think they're very important ones. And well said. Dennis in Shreveport, Louisiana. Hey, Dennis, what's on your mind today?
Oh, good morning. How are you doing?
Very well. What's up?
The issue that you brought up about Bain Capital is something I've known about for a while, but very few people know. And there are not that many people paying attention right now. And why don't we take a play out of the Republican playbook and make it a talking point? There's people that come election time would never have heard.
It's already happened. I mean, but see, it's getting nationwide press right now, because you have Republicans attacking Republicans and attacking Romney for Bain. And therefore, I believe that they're inoculating him come November.
That could be true, but inoculation against a disease is not necessarily a cure. I think there's still people. There's people right now that, even though it's getting nationwide, won't have heard of it. And there are still a lot of people out there that's not paying attention to the nation news. You'd be surprised how few people really pay attention to politics. So I don't think you'll make it a dead
issue. I wouldn't be surprised. I know. Yeah. No, I know that you're right.
I worked for a congressman from Louisiana in the early 80s, and I read the first budget that Ronald Reagan come out where he gave the big tax cuts. And I related that back to our congressman. I didn't understand how that was going to work, because all you give money to rich people, they're going to find some place to do something with it. They're not going to all of a sudden build a factory in the middle of a desert with no people to buy anything, any kind of product.
That's what experience tells us ever since 81 when Reagan started dropping taxes. Yep.
Absolutely. I told him, you give that money to me or people that work like me, I'll spend it. And I'll make some jobs. Yep. I'll create some jobs.
That's right.
And that's
exactly right, because the consumers in our economy are the job creators.
That's exactly right. I had a conversation with my insurance person the other day, and, of course, she's a Republican. And I said, I asked her who she thought the job creators was, and she said, I'm sure it's going to be something that I haven't heard. I said, well, it's me and you. Me and you being able to go out and spend money in the marketplace and create jobs. All the jobs,
right. 100% of your income, in all probability, or something close to it.
Well, you take $1 out of the
economy.
As
opposed to a rich person spending 5% of their income.
Well, you take any money out of the economy, and it hurts it, no matter what the job is. And a lot of people don't understand that. They think a government is run like a household, which it's not. They have to have.
No, it's not. It's run like a government. And you take that, you're absolutely right. You take that money out in the form of tax cuts for wealthy people, and they stash that money in Swiss bank accounts, and suddenly the economy just contracted. And on the other hand, if you give that money to working people like yourself, Dennis, then and thanks for listening to us there in Shreveport, Louisiana. If you give that money to working people like yourself, guess what? They grow the economy because they spend it. Working people spend almost all of their money. And in many cases, all their money plus some. So we will be back with the founder of the Pirate Party movement. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I am Carl Frisch. Find more about me at carlfrisch.com. Follow me on Twitter at Carl Frisch, K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. Joining me now, one of my favorites, a good friend of mine, Tina Dupuy. She is the managing editor of Crooks and Liars, a syndicated columnist and a regular on Currents, The Young Turks. And I'll be on The Young Turks tonight, so be sure to tune in to Current Television, 7 p.m. Eastern for that show. I'll be talking about a few different issues, New Hampshire, Gitmo's 10-year anniversary, et cetera. Tina, thanks for joining me.
I'm going to be on The Young Turks tomorrow, so we're going to just miss each other.
Well, little birdie told me that you'll be traveling on the Eastern Seaboard very soon, and I'll be able to see you.
Yeah, let's hope. I mean, I normally just, you know, see you on the radio and television.
Yes, many people just see me on the radio,
friends,
Tina.
But...
So you've got a great column out, the GOP's long said march to the inevitable nominee, and you can read it at tinadupuy.com. Tina, it is a sad march, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, the thing is, we have a media infrastructure set up to have a very exciting elections campaign.
Says excitement like Iowa.
Right, but we need a Hillary Obama showdown. We need, you know, a Sarah Palin in order to, without that, we just have like these gigantic news holes and 24 hours. I mean, I went out to a film festival last night, came back, and MSNBC was still on talking about John Huntsman 3 hours later.
Well, you know, he did get one of the three tickets out of New Hampshire. I just wish that, you know, for the love of Joseph Smith, somebody would tell him that he didn't get a ticket. It was just a Greyhound coupon.
Oh, God. But, you know, I mean, it's like there's just nothing exciting about Republican primaries when, you know, there's not some Hail Mary passes going on. Because we all know that Romney's going to get it. We all know that he's the inevitable nominee because Republicans always pick the next in line.
Right. I mean,
always,
since 19...
Always. Reagan didn't just come out of nowhere. I mean,
he ran twice.
President before.
Yeah. I mean, since 1964, only two Republican nominees, save for Ford, who was a sitting president, have been the nominee without running before. So, I mean, your piece, I mean, for the lack of excitement, do you think we've replaced it with the crazy? Because I love this quote that you have in your piece. I've stopped using the word hypocrite for people like Gingrich. It's a 75-cent word no one cares about. A better term is fraud. Newt Gingrich is a fraud?
Yes, absolutely. Well, he's going after, for some crazy reason, and I'm sorry I used the word crazy.
Yes, it does make crazy people
after,
at home think
right.
I'm not Newt Gingrich.
But he's going after Mitt Romney for his time at Bain Capital when he was at another firm, a competing firm, after he was on the advisory board after he left his speakership. So for ethics violations. So, I mean, this guy is like really a piece of work. I mean, but even for him, he's like, he's talked about the sanctity of marriage. I mean, all this like really weird stuff. And you're like, wait a second. He also is one of the biggest bomb throwers that we've had in the last 20 years of politics, and now he's like lamenting that people are going negative in politics. And it was like, no, when they say people, they mean you.
Well, you know, whenever he says that he's happy, it's kind of like when you go to a restaurant and it's called like tasty Chinese food, and you're like, you shouldn't have to put the word tasty in your title. I should know it just by tasting it. Newt Gingrich should tell his face that he's happy.
Clean bathrooms. Well, yeah. I don't want to go there then.
Right. Newt Gingrich should tell his face that he's happy. But it's like a redux of the 90s. It smells like the 90s. You've got Rick Santorum, and your piece talks about some of the stuff that really hasn't come up, primarily because you just wouldn't use it to attack a candidate during a Republican primary, but his central role in the Terri Schiavo controversy. I mean, that's something we haven't heard about in a while.
Well, that was one of those. I mean, I went through, my column is basically the low light of the 90s, the low light of the 2000s, are now running for the GOP nominee. But Santorum, he kind of made himself, he put himself in the middle of the Terri Schiavo thing and visited the you know, what was to be the deathbed of Terri Schiavo, a woman who was in a decades-long vegetative state. He showed up uninvited to her bed, where she was resting. And, you know,
which is frankly better than Herman Cain, who just shows up uninvited to, you know, many beds,
right.
I guess.
Anyone's bed, right.
Right.
But so, you know, and there was some great, back in the day, there was some great investigative journalists who tried to figure out why Santorum, a Pennsylvania senator, was in Florida at that time, and turns out he was there. He got there on a corporate jet provided by Walmart and was there for a fundraiser Outback Steakhouse. So he was basically on an errand, a fundraising errand, and then said, you know what, let's just interject myself into a national story. And he kind of made it about himself. And then, of course, the entire Republican Party really jumped the proverbial shark with this Terri Schiavo.
And that's when things started to shift. When things really started to shift during the Bush
years. Because, you know, they had a special session of Congress, and Bush on Easter Sunday got onto Air Force One and flew to Washington to sign this piece of legislation. And it was this big thing that they were going to save Terri, and, like, Terri didn't want to be saved, and people who cared about her didn't want to be saved. It was totally an overreach of government.
More than anything, she couldn't be saved.
2,000 Americans dying in the street of New Orleans without a special session from Congress and without a visit from Santorum.
And how dare you, Tina? President Bush had to give John McCain his birthday cake that day.
Right.
So he was kind of tied up.
We're talking about Hurricane Katrina. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
There was literally a picture of him fiddling while people were dying in the streets.
Yeah, it's just absurd. And the fact that we're not allowed to talk about George W. Bush anymore or all of these stories that happened in the 90s and the early 2000s, shows just how remarkably fatiguing the Bush administration was, but why it's so important to keep talking about it, because people will forget. I mean, the entire media, much of the media rather, has Bushnesia. We never hear about him anymore, and we're only now crawling out of the problems that he left us in.
Right, and barely at that. I mean, we still have his, you know.
December was a good month, and if you listen to Mitt Romney, who's a noted economist, if you listen to Rick Santorum, who's a noted economist, it's because people are so hopeful that there's going to be a Republican president in 2013 that they've started hiring again.
Right. This is my favorite thing about Mitt Romney today. He kind of like came out with this like really hard stance against immigration, against illegal immigration, while he has like there's a colony of his cousins in Mexico and his father was born in Mexico.
Well, tell that story, because there's a reason that the Romneys went to Mexico.
Right. So, I mean, this is the history of the Mormon Church, along with American history. You know, they all went out west while it was still a territory, to be able to practice polygamy in their religion. And then in order, basically it was outlawed by the U.S. government. And so, and to flee persecution, Romney's great grandfather went to Mexico where his father was born. And then there was a civil war, I believe, in 1912 in Mexico, and so they asked, the Romneys asked the U.S. government for a bailout, essentially, and they spent, in today's equivalent would be millions of dollars to get these people who fled the country for to evade the law to bring them back to the state.
That would make a really good HBO television series, I think. Big
really
Love, Mexico
very,
edition.
So, you know, Romney probably doesn't want to go and talk about, I mean, it really should be Mexico that should be coming out with an immigration stance against the Romneys and not the other way around.
Well, it wouldn't be his last bailout. As I've been talking about the last day or so, when Mitt Romney was at Bain Capital, he sought a bailout from FDIC for $44 million, which was never paid back. So,
can I just say that I love the fact that it's called Bain Capital? I just think that's a great name. It's like
it is remarkably punny.
Isn't it wonderful? I mean, Bain Capital. It couldn't have been. I mean, if we made this up, if I was writing a short fiction story and I named it Bain Capital and everyone was kind of harping on it, the editor's note would be, you know, could you not do something that was so on the nose as Bain Capital?
I couldn't agree more. Tina Dupuy, we'll be back in just a minute after the break. Can you stick around?
Of course.
All righty. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, more with Tina Dupuy from Crooks and Liars. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. What is going on? To let us know what's going on, we're talking to Tina Dupuy. She's a syndicated columnist and also the managing editor of Crooks and Liars. You should go to the website and check it out. It's always great content. They're great friends of the show. Tina, thanks for sticking around.
Thanks for having me.
So you've been watching this thing, and there's been debate after debate after debate after debate.
Well, hours after the last debate, yes.
No, on the same network.
Right.
When did debate fatigue set in for you?
Oh, I don't know. After 370 seconds. after about the 9 millionth time I heard 999, I just kind of...
I kind of missed that, frankly.
In a wall.
I miss Herman Cain. I mean, how many more women do you think would have come forward if he never left the race?
Carl, there were thousands of women who were not going to come forward.
Which in a country of 360 million leaves quite a few.
There were tons of women who he did not molest.
When did you stop beating your wife? I have not stopped beating thousands of people.
There are so many people that I have not kicked in the shins.
So what do you expect next in this thing? I mean, I was talking to John Nicholas from The Nation earlier, and he said that he thinks these candidates are going to stick around. I do, too, even if they know they're not going to be the nominee. Because let's be honest, none of them are going to be the running mate. None of them are going to get jobs in a potential Romney administration. And if the gravy train of Obama hatred dies because Romney's elected, none of them are going to get much money from Fox News or talk radio or even a column or a book.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're just hoping that Romney is going to implode. I mean, I have no idea why Rick Perry is still there, besides from my own amusement. you know, I mean,
I've heard he's been scouting locations for N-Word Ranch 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Buddy Romer got 930 votes last night, and Rick Perry got, I think, like 1,500. So, I mean, there's no real reason why he's there. But I think, you know, he has money to spend.
Well, one of the theories out there is that because Perry started out this race very strong and had a lot of national big-name fundraising support, that those donors have come to him and been like, look, you have to stay in this race for South Carolina to make sure Mitt Romney wins. You know, I don't think that anybody having watched his campaign would think that he could even help do that properly.
Yeah, no, at this point, anybody who said anything to him a couple of months ago is not saying the exact same thing. I mean, everyone who hoped this guy was going to go in there, and he sounded like Bush, and he was from Texas, and a big state governor. I mean, on paper, this guy is amazing. You know, way too religious in inappropriate ways. Total guy that, you know, he is the Tebow, whatever, of politics in a spectacularly like parody type of way. Anything that any people who were fans of his a couple months ago are now kind of cringing because he's just, you know, he's like this runaway train who just will not stop.
Well, you know, funny, I think it was Politico had a report this morning saying that when Rick Perry showed up in South Carolina, he went into a diner and a woman came up and put her arm around him to take a photo and said, I think it's great that you're in this race being a homophobe and a racist.
Right.
So, you know, they call it like they see it there.
Right. But I think that was, he broke a record for having a YouTube video that had the most unlikes or dislikes in the history of YouTube when he came out against homosexuals in the
Tina, YouTube and technology has a liberal bias, so you can't blame him.
But he almost got a standing ovation on Saturday night just for being able to list the three things that he would cut while president, which means that the standards have been really lowered for him. It's not that he's going to take the country by storm. It's that he can list all three things.
If he opened his mouth and marbles fell out, he'd get a standing ovation at this point.
Really, yeah. I mean, to me, you know, someone who, you know, I'm just a spectator. This is, you know, he's not my governor. Wow.
Well, I mean,
he's an absurd.
I know you have many family members that live in his his neck of the woods.
You know, I have my family members all live in Ron Paul's district. If you want to talk about cuckoo bananas, let's have a talk.
Hey, at least he's honest about cuckoo bananas. You know, he said yesterday that they are dangerous, and I couldn't agree more. They're especially dangerous to your email inbox if you talk about them for too long. And
or
I use the royal they so that I can confuse them between LaRouche and the Paul people. But, you know,
thank you for saying that.
I've been,
you know what?
I've been tweeting out whenever I get hate mail. I just send them a link to.
I said it. I'm going to deal with this mail, but I'll say it again. Ron Paul is an incumbent LaRouche, and that's it.
Look at their
newsletters. Remove the bylines and tell me if there's a difference.
I don't know. I believe in the Bilderbergs, but in honesty, whenever I get one of those emails, I always send people links on how to deprogram themselves from cults. You're the managing editor of Crooks and Liars.
I love that segue.
You talk about it too long. It's like kind of like Beetlejuice. You say the name three times, and all of a sudden you get a bunch of hate mail. So you're the editor of Crooks and Liars. What are you guys talking about over there today? It's crooksandliars.com.
Well, we're talking about Pappy Cannon.
Goodness.
Pretty racist book. And now is blaming colored people. Or, you know, he said people of color.
Militant gays. Militant gays. And by the way, there wouldn't be any militant gays if it wasn't for Barack Obama ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Right, but Van Jones has gone after Pat Buchanan, who's now speaking of Pat Buchanan in the third person, and we have that up right now on Trump Page of Crooks and Liars, and it's pretty funny. But, you know, he wrote this book. To me, it's finally him being honest. I mean, he's been on MSNBC. He's been really watered down, Pat Buchanan. And, you know, and he kind of, in 1992, he made Republicans embarrassed of being Republican. And
well, it was my favorite Molly Ivins. My favorite Molly Ivins quote of all time was that he delivered that speech in its original German. Tina Dupuy, I want to thank you for joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about Pat Buchanan after this break. But TinaDupuy.com, CrooksandLiars.com. Follow her, go to her website, sign up for her emails, follow her on Twitter at Tina Dupuy. Tina, thanks for joining me. All righty, this is the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, white people's problems, or Pat Buchanan.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm a liberal smarty, and I know just what they're trying to do. Telling those old white folks, vote Republican Party, or the gay commies will come for you. I pity the fool that falls for what they do.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom today. I am Carl Frisch. I'll be here all afternoon. You can find more about me at carlfrisch.com. That's K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H.com. Follow me on Twitter, like me on Facebook, connect with me, and we'll keep you up to date on what I'm up to. Tom will be back tomorrow broadcasting live from Sweden. Joining me now, I want to talk to Fred Sains. He is from the Human Rights Campaign. He's the vice president of communications and marketing there. You know, this Republican primary has really been about as homophobic as you can possibly imagine. And with these first two states out of the way, two states, Iowa and New Hampshire, who coincidentally have marriage equality, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to bring Fred on and chat about what the race has been up about in terms of the LGBT community. Fred, thanks for joining me.
Sure, absolutely. My pleasure. Happy New Year to you, Carl.
You too. So, you know, one thing that caught my attention early on in this race was the National Organization of Marriage's pledge that they had that was just so incredibly archaic. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, it's clearly a sign that this Republican field, and let's narrow it down really to Governor Romney, espouse fairly anti-democratic values in American society. And it's really kind of a curtsy, if you will, to the most far-right elements of their party. Whether or not, you know, some of these views will be moderated in a general election, I think is fairly hard to make. But it's fairly hard to kind of tell so far, because it's going to be virtually impossible to, to kind of distance yourself from a pledge after you have signed it.
Well, and, especially, I mean, it's one thing to flip-flop, you know, this is a guy who said that he was going to be a bigger champion for gay rights
correct.
And liberty than Ted Kennedy. It's one thing to flip-flop 10 years later on that than it is to flip-flop a few months later or a few weeks later.
Carl, that's absolutely correct. And Mitt Romney's flip-flops are a part of his DNA, because they happen on every single issue. And on issues that affect LGBT community here in the United States, they're absolutely well-pronounced. In 1994, in 2004, rather, when he was running against Ted Kennedy, he pledged to be better than Ted Kennedy on gay rights issues. Now, you fast forward to 2011, when he took a pledge by the National Organization for Marriage.
Which is a hate group, by the way, by the
absolutely.
Southern Poverty Law Center.
Which has one of the main tenets of the pledge is that if elected, the candidates that sign the pledge, which includes Rick Santorum as well, will establish a presidential commission in order to investigate alleged incidents of harassment against their supporters. Now, mind you, the important substance to those alleged incidents of harassment is that every single court or administrative body that has ever considered whether or not those alleged incidents of harassment ever occurred have found that they are without substance and that their various lawsuits
were concluded. It's part of this devious plot on the far-right evangelical wing of the conservative movement to try and paint themselves as victims when
correct.
They're anything but.
Absolutely. It's a complete and total farce. But it is a very clever manipulation of the conversation. So whereas members of our community, you know, try and seek equal protection under the law, equality and fairness, really in the ideal of our American democratic values, they try and kind of like turn the conversation in their favor by saying that they are the ones that are being harassed. They are
Meanwhile,
the ones that are being victimized.
We're not asking for anything from them. It's not like, you know, the Catholic
no.
Church puts so much money into NOM, it's not even funny. I'm not telling the Catholic Church that priests have to marry two men or two women in the same way I'm not telling the Catholic Church that they have to marry a Mormon to a Jew.
No, correct. You're absolutely right. It is, to be honest with you, you know, the Pope came out, I believe, yesterday and
right.
said that marriage equality, you know, to kind of paraphrase what he said, it spells the end of civilization as we know it. And it is all of these are basically very clever manipulations in order to kind of turn the table and all of a sudden have it appear as if the evil is being inflicted on those who oppose equality.
Well, let's look at the arc of their discussion, though, because, you know, for the better part of the 1980s and the early 1990s, they could say whatever they wanted against gay and lesbian people. They could call us names. They could demean us openly in the media, in the news pages, in editorials, on television, on the radio.
Yep.
And over time, as we've come out of the closet and people have gotten to know us as being just like them, They've not been able to do that anymore. So,
and Carl, that is, you have put your finger on what is at the root of the change in public opinion. You know, according to a poll that HRC did over the summer, 7 out of 10 Americans know someone who is lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. And I believe that as they have come to know us as children, as parents, as coworkers, as neighbors, as their garbage collectors or their doctors or their, you know, teacher, they have found when we are not trying to like close the deal in an election, but when they have, you know, run into us as part of our day life and become our friends, that the messages that the opponents of equality espouse right. simply don't ring true.
Well, and now they've tried to change their message. So you get people like Mitt Romney, who in one breath says he doesn't support marriage equality, and the next breath says he doesn't support discrimination against LGBT people.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is the most clever of farces, because we have at least gotten to the point where being anti-LGBT is politically incorrect in American society. But the problem with that is that the opposition is, in fact, far more insidious.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it is, in essence, a workaround to what we used to get, which is the Jesse Helms kind of attack, which was full frontal, if you will. Now it's much more clever and disguised in beautiful language. The problem is that Mitt Romney may very well be, you know, against discrimination, but his policies, the policies that he would promote as president, and certainly his rhetoric as a presidential candidate, further discrimination.
Right, Amy, and I often say, I don't know what's worse, a politician who's a homophobe, or somebody who's willing to play on homophobia and isn't actually homophobic. I think the latter might be true. And if Romney's not homophobic and he's willing to use homophobia to further his own political career, that's far worse.
Yeah. I mean, it is if you look at kind of the evolution of the LGBT civil rights movement, you know, over the past 10 years, it really has been an amazing trajectory. Maybe even if we pull it a little bit back from kind of the days of Jesse Helms in the mid-90s, where there was absolutely like nothing wrong with going on the floor of the United States Senate and saying that, you know, he had absolutely no tolerance for the homosexual lifestyle. That kind of speech would not be given on the United States Senate today. But instead, what we're finding is that the attacks against LGBT people and the issues that are important to them are far more clever and disguised in ways that, you know, are not as easy to fight, because the objection seemingly is about something else.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's really about homophobia.
Well, I mean, and it's not just about homophobia for this party. It's a lot. It has a lot to do with women as well. And yesterday on the show, I was talking about how, you know, our straight friends, our straight brothers and sisters, they've seen the religious right in this community go after LGBT folks for years now. But one thing that has been less and less likely until this presidential cycle for some reason is seeing the religious right going after the bedrooms of heterosexuals. And now, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they came for the gays and now they're coming for straight folks. And they want to get in the way of contraception for straight people. They want to get in the way of controlling a woman's ability to have children. This is not just about us anymore. And I think that the more that this happens, the more our straight friends and family members will identify with our plight.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the more that we align with similarly situated individuals and groups, the more likely that we are able to get our point across that we are all really kind of the subjects of attack here by the opponents of equality. Rarely do they only kind of, you know, choose one issue and only go after the gays, for instance.
Right.
It's typically kind of a, you know, it is a kind of a heavy plate that they have, with an awful lot of kind of victims being served up, if you will, for their discrimination. And I think, you know, Americans increasingly see that. It's really kind of, it shouldn't be a mystery to anyone that Americans find there to be very little advancement in our society made when politicians talk about social issues. Why?
Absolutely.
Because it doesn't get anybody a job. It doesn't advance our, you know, strategic objectives as a country. It certainly doesn't advance our position in the world. So, you know, social issues are kind of best left at home and best left to the responsibility of families to be really around loving, committed relationships, and the value structure be, you know, left to the parents that raise the children in our society.
I couldn't agree more, Fred. Fred Sains, thanks for joining me. Human
My
Rights
pleasure.
Campaign. Go to their website, hrc.org. Looking forward to see what HRC has up for us in 2012. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and we'll be right back.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, today's top news stories with the Talk Radio News Service. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom until 3 o'clock Eastern. This is Carl Frisch. You can find out more from me at carlfrisch.com. Follow me on Twitter at Carl Frisch. Joining me now to talk about the news is Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service, who I understand is still in New Hampshire. Ellen?
On the phone because we were on our way to D.C. But
now, are you on the Greyhound bus with John Huntsman? Because he apparently got a ticket.
No. I'm not on the bus with John Huntsman. But I will tell you this, if you look at Talk Radio News' YouTube account or whatever, you can take a look at YouTube and put in Ellen Ratner and Rick Santorum. I do these radio roundtables where I get everybody can ask a candidate one question. And I usually don't ask a question, but I just could not help myself. So I had to ask Santorum about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It just was, you know, an imperative. So he starts giving me this runaround yesterday about how they're going to have recruitment problems and this is going to hurt the forces. Well, anybody who knows anything about anything, first of all, they're cutting down on the number of people in the military in terms of boots on the ground kind of guys or actually personnel.
Right.
Number two, you can't get into the military these days. Well, you can, but it's virtually difficult, if not impossible, to get in without some kind of college, even if it's a little community college, because they're oversubscribed.
They right, it's not
no
2002 anymore.
Right, and they have no difficulty subscribing, getting people to come into the military. None.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing about it is you look at any other Western country that has allowed LGBT people into the military, and it's had absolutely no change whatsoever other than making those people that are LGBT in the military a little bit happier.
It's the most, and Romney, Santorum goes on and on. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to ask Romney the question because, of course, Romney doesn't let himself be interviewed by many
right.
people.
Right. Well,
he
you know, the problem,
debate, but that's about it.
The problem with Rick Santorum is that he talks about gay sex more than I do, and I'm a gay man. So,
right.
So what's your take on New Hampshire and what's next?
Okay. My take on New Hampshire is the following. Look, it's over. It's going to be Romney. The Republican establishment, a lot of the leadership in Congress sent up their aides, quote unquote, as volunteers, which they were, to work the Romney campaign, which they did. It looks like they're looking at Rubio because he has to get Florida. So that's going to happen. And now, of course, we have the money that was put in for this documentary.
Right.
That is going to be shown all over South Carolina, even though Club for Growth and all that Americans for Prosperity, they're all over Romney. But there was this documentary being made. It is being shown, they have gone back. Apparently, there's enough footage since the 1994 Kennedy Senate race
yeah.
With Romney that they have all this stuff on Bain Capital, and they just pulled it out. And the money that is coming in from Sheldon Adelson, who actually is from Massachusetts, to the Gingrich campaign, they've been friends a number of times. Sheldon Adelson runs the two large hotels that are not union in Las
Vegas. And he worked very closely with Gingrich during the 2010 elections.
Right. And they're super PAC. Of course, they're not supposed to be coordinating with the campaign, but, you know, is a 10-pound Robin fat, called Winning Our Future. They have gotten all this money. Huntsman was so horrified by the film, apparently, that he actually turned it down.
Incredible. And I understand somebody from the RNC, and maybe it was the political director, said that, you know, anybody who touches that is persona non grata.
Right. But, see, Newt doesn't really have to worry because he's already persona non grata.
Right.
And he's got his old friends in, and he can make his living doing his, you know, his PAC. He's going to be untouched by this. And probably if he doesn't, he's going to make several hundred thousand dollars a year after this is through from his friend Adelson.
Right. Not to mention books and TV and radio contracts. I mean, this is really at this point about muddying and dirtying to Romney to the point at which it becomes very difficult for him to win the nomination so that the gravy train of Obama hatred can continue.
Well, yes, I think it becomes very difficult for them to win the nomination. And I just want to say one other thing. I spoke to a Republican yesterday. Well, I can say many things, but I spoke to a Republican yesterday, and I said, you know, you think Huntsman may do okay in 2016? Oh, no. It's going to be somebody like Thun or Christie. Now, Christie may be a possibility. But if you take Thun and you look at the fact the millennials are called the millennials because they turned 18
right.
in 2000, and you add 16 years to that, right, you get about, what, 32 years old or whatever. And these guys are going to be with children, et cetera, in 2016. They don't give a you-know-what about social issues. In fact, they think that people like Santorum are crazy. They voted, that's the group that voted for Paul in New Hampshire. And if they think these old-style Republicans are going to be the guys that win, it's just not going to happen.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned, Ellen, it's interesting you mentioned Thun, because I've been saying all along that the Washington Beltway choice for Romney's VP is Thun and not Rubio, because Thun has been vetted against Daschle. He's not made any waves in the Senate. You've not heard a peep from him since he first got in the Senate, which makes him perfect for a VP running mate. Rubio,
but
on the other hand,
doesn't bring much to the table. So either Romney has to figure he can win this.
Romney can't do what McCain did and pick a more exciting running mate than himself.
Right. That's true. That's true, but I'm not sure. Well, it's interesting. I think people in the White House think they're going to run against Rubio.
Well, it'd be interesting either way. I mean, you know, the Republicans are going to have – this is what happens when Republicans nominate people they're not excited about. The nominee ends up having to pick somebody that, you know, surprises everybody and is, you know, super exciting for demographic reasons or what have you, instead of picking somebody who's capable of being commander-in-chief. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, thanks for joining us before you head back to town.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service, thank you very much. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Coming up, we are going to be talking to Adele Stan from Alternate. She's the Washington Bureau Chief, about, really, are we done yet? Can we stop it with Iowa and New Hampshire? Tom Hartman Program, Carl Frisch, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom Hartman. I am Carl Frisch with you for this final hour today. Tom will be back tomorrow broadcasting live from Sweden, thanks to the marvels of modern technology and something a Republican senator once called the inner tubes. This race has done one thing for me. This race for the White House has done one thing for me. It has hardened my resolve that Iowa and New Hampshire should be scrapped. They should still have primaries if they want them, but they shouldn't be first. It's a joke at this point. And I've worked in more Iowa caucuses, Iowa straw polls, New Hampshire primaries than I care to count. going back to 1996, both for Republicans and Democrats. And I will admit, I experimented with politics in my youth, and that's why I was a Republican. Everybody experiments in their youth with something. I happen to pick politics, and I apologize, and I've made my penance. Joining me now to talk about the media spectacle that is the early primary process in this country is Adele Stan. She's a good friend of mine, and she's the Washington Bureau Chief for Alternate. Adele, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me, Carl.
So, I don't know if you made it to New Hampshire or Iowa this cycle.
I'm in New Hampshire. You are looking
so
at
another
me
person
in
who's,
New Hampshire.
Another person who is still in New Hampshire because they couldn't get on the Greyhound with John Huntsman. I've been saying all, you know, for the better part of 24 hours now that when he said he had a third ticket out of New Hampshire, nobody told him it was a Greyhound coupon.
Greyhound, yeah, well, that seems about right. I mean, he did confide in me his plan for winning the nomination.
Well, did it include his father's checkbook?
No, he said it's all about broadening the Republican coalition by competing in open primaries. But, of course, those are all in southern states who are not likely to go for Huntsmania. But he basically, his idea is that if he can attract independents and Democrats to vote in these open primaries, then he has a shot at winning the nomination.
Well, it did so well in New Hampshire. I mean, look at it this way. Karl Rove is now firmly embedded with Mitt Romney. I mean, he only talks negative about the other candidates. If Huntsman even looked like he had a chance in South Carolina, and I was in South Carolina for the 2000 Republican primaries when those robocalls went around.
That was a lovely one, yeah.
They went around about McCain having an illegitimate black daughter.
Right.
You know that Karl Rove would start robocalls against Huntsman saying that he worked for an illegitimate black president.
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, I think it's interesting that Huntsman is playing this game, and he attracted half of those voters, which are a minority in New Hampshire, 10% who say they strongly oppose the Tea Party. So, I mean, I think him being out there with this kind of anti-Tea Party message is interesting.
Well, it's certainly helpful. I mean, there's one thing that's true about this race, and that is if Huntsman were the nominee for the Republican Party, Barack Obama would have a very tough chance getting reelected. But that's because
that's
this is a man who has stood up for science. He's stood up for normal things like international relations. And he says that there's nothing wrong with working for a president from another party. That's not going to go over well with Republican primary voters, no matter how you cut the dice.
No, but I mean, it would definitely attract independents in a general election.
That's exactly the point. So let's talk about the absurdity that is Iowa and New Hampshire. And you've got a great piece out, Why the New Hampshire Primary is an Elaborate Reality Show Designed for National Media. Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, if you look at New Hampshire, right, there's 12 delegates up for grabs in
right.
the primaries that go to the national convention. So it's not about the number of delegates. What it's about is you have a state where the media is affordable, though not cheap, because you're talking about the Boston
sure.
market, that is easy to travel because it's small. But more than anything, it's just the perfect stage set for an idea of Americana.
Right. Everything is small town there because nothing's big town.
Right. It's quaint. It's, you know, it's got plain spoken people who have, you know, an interesting accent. It's sort of the original Americans, right? I mean, this is
right.
one of the 13 original colonies, you know. So it's got all that going for it. Where I might disagree with you, Carl, is that I don't know that any other state in any other state it's going to play any differently in terms of the media circus piece of it. You know, it's this
That's
myth
true.
Of retail politics where you wind up going into you know, say a diner that's going to be a meet and greet for a candidate, right? And you have, you know, 80 people from the media, you have 10 voters, and then you have, like, in this Ron Paul event, you had, like, almost 100 high school students who took a bus from, who took buses from Massachusetts, you know, to observe the primary. But where did Ron Paul go? He went straight to that room of young people to have the media follow him around shaking the hands of people who might look like college-age New Hampshire voters.
Right.
And he totally ignored the people who came to see him who were going to vote in the primary.
Well, here's my problem, though. I mean, it's going to be a media circus wherever, and I've worked on the, you know, the press buses and the planes on various presidential campaign cycles. It's always been, you know, more or less a show.
Right.
I would say that there's not quite the volume of seasoned journalists doing it anymore. Remember in 2000 and 2004, I went from working for McCain in 2000 and Howard Dean in 2004, and there was this guy from Newsweek named Peter Goldman who wrote basically the books on presidential politics for Newsweek going back to 1964. There's not that kind of seasoned reporters on those, you know, those buses and planes anymore, because they've either been forced into retirement or they just can't handle the wear and tear anymore. Not to mention, the industry itself just won't spend the money that they used to. So there's a simple reason why the retail politicking of these candidates has declined by so much this cycle, and it's been played out on television as like a reality show on in debates. And that's because
the demise of long form journalism.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to that, and the news cycle, of course, rewards anybody with, you know, with a flip cam or, you know, video on their iPhone.
The news cycle being every 15 minutes, hardly time to write a real piece.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
You know, it was only 2004 that Walter Shapiro, formerly of USA Today and a variety of other publications, wrote a book called One Car Caravan. That book could not be written today unless you were part of, Gary Johnson's campaign.
Right. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, it just is insane. The Huntsman came in number three with 17% of the vote. I went to his
number three with a bullet, without a gun, but still with a bullet.
Without a gun, with a bullet. That's good. That party was just, I mean, overrun by media because, I mean, first of all, it was the only
kind
of
email
surprise.
They love him. He's their John McCain now.
Well, and he looks like a leading man, too. I mean, he is very dreamy.
He's my favorite high school dropout.
Is he a high school dropout?
A high school dropout. He had a band to follow. He had to follow his dream, his band Wizard. Woo, Wizard! Yeah.
Wow, way cool.
Yeah.
And his daughters are just excellent, you know?
Right.
So for a media show, he's a lot more fun, but also, you know, there was, like, very little surprising in the result. He was the only kind of what I call a neo-surprise. You know,
well, I think the real surprise was that, you know, Buddy Romer almost caught up with Rick Perry. Adele, can you stick around after this break?
Yes, I can. Thank
We're talking to Adele Stan. She's the Washington Bureau Chief for Alternet. She is live with us in New Hampshire. You can see her there in New Hampshire if you're watching with us on Free Speech TV or Ustream. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about New Hampshire and what's next for the Republicans. And then I promise we'll move on to topics other than the Republican nominating circus. Because, you know, I've long since passed the point of no return in terms of my sanity when talking about this race. Kind of like Rick Santorum, long since sane. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch, and we'll be back after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, more with Adele Stan from Alternet. I could use a little bit more sunshine. It is cold in Washington, D.C. today. Filling in for Tom Hartman today, I am Carl Frisch. We'll be with you till the top of the next hour. We are chatting with Adele Stan. She is the Washington Bureau Chief for Alternet, and she joins us live from the Granite State. Adele, thanks for sticking around.
Yeah, and Carl, if I may, I just want to give a shout-out to my hosts here in the Granite State who are actual New Hampshireites. I'm in the home of master furniture maker Charles Mower. I'm sitting in a handmade Windsor chair made by Charles's own hands, and you know, I have out New Hampshire the rest.
Wait, why?
I've out New Hampshire.
Why would he make? Why would he make chairs when we can do it more efficiently in other countries? I'm serious. I mean, shouldn't that be the job of a 7-year-old in China?
You're cruel. You're so cruel.
It's true, and that's what makes it more cruel.
I can ask, right here.
It's so sad. So how do you, you know, the problem is obviously the way the media turns this into a circus, but how do you stop it from turning it into a circus?
You know, I mean, it's a really tough question given the way, you know, and these days when everybody is a journalist, it's a really, really, really tough question. I don't know the answer to that question. I'm part of the problem myself, right? I mean, I see my friends Chuck and Beth Mueller every 4 years because I'm coming up to cover the New Hampshire primary, you know?
The fact that I have probably been to more small towns in Iowa than I have in my home state of California is a problem.
Right. So, you know, I don't really know the answer to that question. I mean, you know, if you really want to get heretical, I mean, you can talk about, you know, altering the Constitution so that we have a parliamentary system. I think that's the only thing that you can do to change it.
You know, there's only one constitutional amendment on my plate, and that is taking away corporate personhood and making campaign donations no longer free speech. I don't think the country could stand doing too many of those. We don't do them too often. And those are the two that I think are most important.
You know what liberals should put a constitutional amendment forward for? Privacy, the right to privacy.
We don't need one. It's in the Constitution as far as I'm concerned. Your Republicans could say it's not, but I happen to be a constitutional progressive. I believe in the written text of the Constitution, and I believe in the 200-year arc that has made it better based on what the founders came up with.
It's the conservatives. I'm talking about the Constitution too.
It's the conservatives who hate the Constitution. They're the ones that want to change what the First Amendment means, get rid of the 14th and 22nd and 24th Amendment.
I'm talking about a political ploy, right? Make Republicans vote against a constitutional amendment for the right to privacy.
It's a good idea. I think what's far more pressing, and the fight that I'm willing to have first, is over the role that corporations are playing in this country right now, because it directly relates to every issue that you could possibly find important in this country.
Well, if you just look at what the super PACs are shaping up for just in these early contests, I mean, it gives you a sense of what we're in for the general election. It's insane.
At least with the super PACs, we know what the job creators are up to. Because they haven't been making any jobs.
Well, that's for sure, right?
Well, the only jobs that they're creating are fact checkers.
And political consultants and political media makers.
Well, I mean, those are the jobs they are creating, and I suppose we could always use more of those.
Yeah, we don't have enough.
Absolutely. So what's next for you? Are you off to back to D.C. or going to South Carolina? What are you going to do?
I am going to go back to D.C. Because, you know, as much as I love covering the presidential race, it's not the only thing that I do, and there's a whole lot else going on.
There's something else happening in this country?
Yeah, there's the Scott Walker recall.
Going fabulously, with the exception of a Wisconsin Supreme Court case. For those that don't know, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, it might have been a judge there, who said that the onus is now on the petition gatherers to get their petitions cleared, as opposed to the governor challenging them.
That's right. I mean, that's some hinky stuff.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's simply a speed bump on the road that's moving very quickly to get rid of that man as governor.
Yeah, as far as the primary goes, I mean, you know, the inevitability of Romney seems to be kind of locked. You know, they say everybody loves a winner, and Romney seems to be the winner that nobody loves. But
well, I mean, you know, he is loved by 25% of half the country. And that's a formula that really will do well in November. If he thought it was hard to run against jokes like Rick Santorum and Rick Perry and Herman Cain and Michelle Bachmann and Newt Gingrich, just wait until he has to step in that ring with President Obama.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I mean, barring unexpected events, I mean, I think Obama shapes up very well against Romney. And I think that the far right of the Republican Party would be happy to pull a Bob Dole on him, which is basically to let him get the nomination and then, you know, basically try to destroy him.
Keep the gravy train running.
Yeah.
Hate Obama, like gravy train. You know, the one thing that struck me about the idea is Romney as the nominee is that he's not been attacked like Democrats would attack him, and I think that that's really going to be the thing that hurts him. What do you think the next step is? I mean, this inevitability thing, obviously. But how does this impact Republicans on the congressional and Senate race? We've got just about a minute left.
Well, I mean, I think right now it's really hard to say because at that level, that's been very much the Tea Party crowd. But the Tea Partiers who were so opposed to Romney seem to, at least in New Hampshire, coalesce behind him. It's going to be different when he gets back into evangelical territory to see whether or not that will take shape. So I think that Romney will probably not have coattails, but if he gets endorsements from people who are running in those local races, that will help him. I think it'll go the other way.
Adele, if we were Republicans, we would be spending every day in South Carolina and the South and parts of the Midwest talking about Romney's religion and his Mormonism. And
exactly
is flip-flopping
right.
on these social issues to try and depress turnout among conservatives. But we're Democrats, so we're going to talk esoterically about the issues. Adele Stand, thanks for joining me. Check out her work at Alternet and follow her on Twitter at Addie Stan, A-D-D-I-E Stan. Thanks for joining me, Adele. This is
so
the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, more with Demand Progress.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. You can find me at carlfrisch.com. And Ron Paul supporters, if you want to send hate mail, you can keep doing it there as well. I'm reading every single message, and I can't help but smile. As I said, Carl Frisch here filling in for Tom Hartman. He'll be back live tomorrow on the show from Sweden, which will be great. I know he's looking forward to being back with all of you. One of the issues that I think is being lost as we talk about the primaries, and frankly, one of the issues that should have been brought up quite a bit more during these, I think it was roughly 3,822 Republican debates for president, is SOPA. It's that internet, the so-called internet piracy bill. And I wanted to talk with somebody about that today. So we brought on Aaron Swores. He is an advisory board director and founder of Demand Progress, and he joins us now. Aaron, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, you know, the problem with this piece of legislation, and there are many, but one of the biggest problems with this legislation, there was this report from Media Matters that showed so little coverage about this bill by the major corporate networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, NPR. And for how big and wide in scope this issue is, you would think that they'd have, you know, plenty of time to devote to it. For those listening at home that have never heard of SOPA, S-O-P-A, why don't you explain what it is?
So basically what this bill does is it gives big companies and the government the power to censor the Internet. Right now, you know, it's true, there are copyrighted material on the Internet, but if you want to take it off, what you do is you find it, and you find the person who posted it, and you take them to court. Under SOPA, you don't need a trial. There doesn't have to be anything, any chance for the other side to tell their part of the story. Instead, the government can just say, oh, that website, it has some copyrighted material on it. We're shutting the whole thing down without even a trial, without due process.
And that would include, like, somebody on YouTube covering somebody else's song.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it also ups the penalties. So if you're found covering someone's song on YouTube, it says it's a felony and you can go to prison for years.
Well, we all know that if this was a law, they would let's say that you're on YouTube and you're a horrible singer and you get, you know, fined and whatever. If you're a great singer, they might not do anything. So it's going to, you know, because you've done something cool with their song, they might not do anything, which is like, you know, really a lot like selective prosecution. So
that's right. You know, and because copyrighted material is everywhere on the Internet, you know, it's been found even most senators' websites have copyrighted material.
Well, I read somewhere that the MPA, the Motion Picture Association, that they had tons of maybe a terabyte worth of illegally downloaded content that had come off of their servers.
Yeah, you know, and it, you know, the House of Representatives as well, right? There's just, you know, copyright law is so complicated and it touches so many things that even people who try really, really hard often make mistakes. And so what this bill does is it allows the government to say, well, you know, the site we don't like,
we'll shut it down because, oh, we found a bit of copyright infringement, and the whole site gets taken down.
And this is something that should be frightening to not just liberals but conservatives. I mean, I think about Rush Limbaugh, who has been an ardent opponent of net neutrality for some inexplicable reason. Rush Limbaugh, on his show every single day, plays song parodies. And these song parodies could shut down his show and his website.
Yeah, I mean, luckily we've seen, you know, the Tea Party joining with us on this. I think a lot of grassroots Republicans understand the dangers of this bill.
But here's the fear. They understood the dangers of not enacting net neutrality. And where are we with that? It only took, you know, the better part of a year and a half and tens of millions of dollars from Internet service providers to sway countless members of Congress, the right-wing organizations that kind of speak to the foot soldiers there, and Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, and the rest of the talking heads to move them away from net neutrality. How do we make sure that they don't do it this time?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the problem. As you said, you know, all the big media companies are in favor of this bill, and they're the ones who run the news networks. So, of course, the news networks aren't talking about it either. But what we have seen is a massive grassroots push. You know, over a million people have signed up at demandprogress.org to oppose the bill. We've had hundreds of thousands of phone calls going into Congress, and we're starting to see demonstrations on the streets. So the more people who sign up at demandprogress.org and take opposition to this, the more we're starting to see a grassroots response to show, you know, people don't want the Internet censored.
So if people want to take action and become part of this campaign to make sure this doesn't happen, they can go to demandprogress.org. One thing that it was interesting to me, because this just doesn't happen usually in the Congress, and I worked on the Rules Committee for the minority when Democrats, just before they took control in 2006, and, you know, you never did anything in Congress that wasn't pre-planned. And SOPA was going to come up for a vote in the Judiciary Committee, and then it was pulled, if I'm not mistaken. Is that a result of the actions that were taken? And what's the next step in terms of keeping this from seeing the light of day?
Yeah, no, that was a big victory. You know, they were in the middle of holding markup on it, where they debate how to rewrite the bill, and they were expected to hold a vote that afternoon. And then there were so many people speaking out, so many phone calls made, a whole bunch of websites put up huge banners on their site asking people to call. You know, just Tumblr.com users made 86,000 calls that day.
Wow.
That all of a sudden they decided to pull it. And so it's that kind of grassroots pressure that really makes a difference. We're going to have a similar fight in a couple weeks when the Senate is going to have a vote on the floor on it. Senator Wyden has agreed to filibuster it, and he'll be reading out the names of everyone who signs our petition. But
and that's a different piece of legislation. That's the IP bill, is that right?
It has a different name. It's
right.
Called Protect IP instead
right.
of SOPA, but it's the same basic idea.
Right.
You know, it's the same Internet censorship bill.
My understanding, though, is that advocates for this draconian measure are trying to frame the Senate version as some kind of a compromise to make it more palatable, which is just a load of BS, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the Senate version came out first, and it was bad, and we opposed it. And then the House came out with a version that was even worse, like even crazier. Now, you know, it's illegal even to show people how to get to websites that SOPA is trying to block. And now they're like, oh, well, okay, well, we'll back off and go to the Senate version now, which doesn't have some of the more egregious stuff we just added. You know, it's a total shell game. The point is both these bills are about censoring the Internet, and that's the important thing to focus on.
Well, and at what point do we post, you know, the faces of these members of Congress who are lead sponsors and have written this legislation?
Yeah, no, I think we need to do that, and more than that, we need to start marching outside their office.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, we've been occupying Wall Street and Los Angeles and D.C. Maybe it's time we occupied the Internet.
Yeah, I mean, people talk about how, you know, in Egypt, when they turned off the Internet, that was a big spur for people to go out into the streets. You know, now that they're thinking about doing the same thing here, we need to do the same.
But it could never happen in America.
We all know American exceptionalism.
Right. So here's the ultimate question. What Democrats are supporting this legislation in the Senate or the House?
There are a lot of Democrats. You know, it's sponsored by a large majority of Democrats as well as Republicans. It was written by Patrick Leahy, a Democrat from Vermont. You know, it was co-sponsored by Amy Klobuchar, a Democrat from Minnesota. Even Senator Al Franken is on this bill.
Well, I mean, Franken is surprising, except, you know, for his back history with the industry.
Yeah, that's the problem.
So here's my question. What pressure can be put on those individual members to get them to pull off from their support?
Well, one of the things we're asking people to do is, you know, members are back home for the recess, and they're holding town halls, and they're running for reelection, and what we need is for people to go out and go to those town halls and ask them questions about these bills, push back against this stuff. So if people are willing to volunteer with that, send us an email at info@demandprogress.org, and we'll get you connected to the right people.
Well, and how do you, if people are going to these town halls, I mean, they're going to go into a room where almost everybody wants to talk about jobs, and perhaps that's why this issue is not getting the coverage it needs, but also why Congress thinks it can slip it through right now. How do they describe the evils of this legislation in simple human words that everybody in the room is going to understand? Because I don't know if you've been to a town hall lately. I wouldn't say that the people there are the most technologically literate people.
Yeah, I think we need to be clear. This is a bill about censoring the Internet. You know, and if it's a Republican senator, you explain it's about government regulation telling you what can go on the Internet and what can't. If it's a Democratic senator, you say, you know, it's about a important civil liberties issue of freedom of speech and due process. But either way, I think, you know, it's pretty clear to people letting the government and big corporations censor the Internet just isn't right.
Yeah, and part of me feels like the word censorship, and it's probably been tested, and I'm probably wrong at this point, but if I'm talking to a conservative crowd, the word censorship isn't terribly frightening. Telling them that it could lead to Rush Limbaugh being shut down because of his funny parodies that they all love is something that would be far more frightening. They hear the word censorship, and all they hear is ACLU and liberal.
Yeah.
So I think we need to be mindful of that and the way that we communicate with our representatives, especially for people that live in the districts of conservatives or have conservative senators. Express your opposition to this legislation in a way that is going to sway them and not frighten them and make them dig in their heels.
Yeah, I mean, when conservatives were opposing net neutrality, they said the reason they opposed it was because it was government regulation of the Internet. Well, this is really government regulation
right.
of the Internet. It's so clear-cut.
Well, it's not just clear-cut. I mean, frankly, it's ballsy, if you ask me, for the industry to go for this. When you consider what the government does to protect those industries. I want to thank you, Aaron, for coming on. Aaron Swartz, he is an advisory board director and founder for Demand Progress. Go join this movement to stop SOPA and to stop the Senate companion bill at demandprogress.org. It is such an important issue. If you think it's been difficult for progressive radio to break through in your markets, just imagine what it would be like with another George W. Bush deciding that anti-war protesters should be turned off from the Internet, or people that are using their creative abilities to inspire the masses. Imagine what it would be like if your favorite websites were disappeared from the Internet for no reason other than somebody's disinterest and dislike of them. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, we'll finish the day with your calls. Welcome back. Closing out the Tom Hartman Program today, I am Carl Frisch. Again, you can find more about me at carlfrisch.com. Follow me on Twitter at Carl Frisch. Find me on Facebook. Tonight, I will be on Current Television's The Young Turks, so be sure to tune in for that. And you can go to my website, carlfrisch.com, for more information. We've got Floyd in Butler, Tennessee. Floyd.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I'm a Republican, and I'm calling for all, if you got any Republicans that do listen to you, I hope there's a few like
we sure
me.
Do.
But I'm an Eisenhower Republican, and I got scared when they brought in that B actor, and then Gore or Gingrich and all of them come in with the New World Order, which I didn't have no understanding what they were talking about.
Right.
And now all these states that are cutting people off from voting, and this is going on right now, and I want these Republicans, so-called Republicans out there, to understand that they just stopped me from voting after 50 years. Because I don't have a driver's license no more. I can't drive. I don't have one. I'm not going to get one. I have no intentions of it.
And Floyd, you know,
and people tell me that I can go down and spend $20 and get an ID. And my
sounds
family's
like a poll
been
tax.
Over here since 1700.
It sounds like a poll tax if you ask me.
Before the United States, but we've been voting without any identification.
Well, you know, you're not the only one with that problem. And by the way, they want that problem to exist for the elderly, for students, for people of color. And to charge somebody to vote, and when was the last time we saw this? I think the party of Lincoln is quickly becoming the party of Jim Crow. And they, you know, they're perfectly happy about it. All right, let's go to Ronald in La Plata, Maryland. Ronald.
Hey there, Maryland. Thank you.
How are you?
I want to say that I enjoyed what you did yesterday when you got that one caller on the air concerning examples that he was giving of the president.
Sure.
And you pressed him on that. I thought that was terrific.
And I wasn't saying that the president hasn't.
Tom Hartman be a team on that program.
Well, I wasn't saying that the president has kept every promise. I was simply pointing out that right-wing anger at the president is not grounded in any reality. They just take for carte blanche that they hate the president, so he's a big fat liar, and they can never come up with an example.
I know, that's what I liked about it. You kept pressing him on that, and I appreciate that. These people get away with too much. They're trying to get around the answer.
Sure.
My question was, my real question here was, I'm going to make it short here. What's going on in Madison, Wisconsin? I haven't heard a thing lately about it.
Well, there was a judge decided in Wisconsin in terms of the recall for Governor Walker that the onus was going to be on the petition circulators to prove the validity of their circulators. Typically, the way it works is that the person being recalled would challenge the petition. So it's kind of going the other way. I think it's going to be a little bump in the road. At the end of the day, they've been going gangbusters there collecting signatures. And, you know, anybody who's doing a real serious petition gathering effort is going to get far more signatures than needed to make up for any signatures that are disqualified. So I think we're going to get it on the ballot there, and that governor is going to be going the way of the dodo bird. He's going to be extinct, and one of the Koch brothers' biggest investments will have gone south. They will have lost a lot of money there. So I think that's going to happen. And the great thing about the recall happening when it's happening is that it's going to help us elect Tammy Baldwin to the U.S. Senate, because Wisconsin at that point will have been politically active for going on 2 years and extremely well organized. So I think we have a lot to look forward to in Wisconsin as a result of this recall of a very horrible governor. And it should put Republican governors on notice to stop messing with labor unions and working families. Look what happened in Ohio with Governor Kasich being flatly rejected by 2/3 of the voters of Ohio. And the same thing is going to happen to the governor, Scott Walker, of Wisconsin, only he's going to lose his job over it. John Kasich, he'll lose his job in 2 more years. But that's what's going to happen. So I want to tell you while we've got just a little bit more time here, it's been a pleasure to fill in for Tom these last 2 days. I've had a great time with some really great guests, senators, members of Congress, Democratic Party chair people, Republican spokespeople. And I'll be back on January 20th to fill in for an hour of Tom's show as well. If you listen to Leslie Marshall, her show in the evening, I'll be filling in for her on the 31st of January. And as I said, I will be on current television's The Young Turks tonight, so you can tune in and watch that. If you ever want to keep up to date on what I'm up to in terms of media appearances, when I'm going to be filling in for Tom next, you can go to my website, carlfrisch.com, and sign up for email updates. And again, you can follow me on Twitter at Carl Frisch. Check out my YouTube videos and my Facebook page as well. We've got time for one more before we have to end it for the day. Let's go to Tim in Chevy Chase. Tim, we've got about a minute left. Let's get right to it.
Yeah, real quick. I just want to make sure that the folks out there, while they're all concentrating on the executive office votes, understand the real importance of getting with the political playing field so partisan.
Right.
Getting beyond the filibuster. The filibuster is being misused, as everybody knows. And in particular, it's very important that people understand that 6 years ago, when John Roberts was put in, there was agreement with a gang of 14, of which 4 GOPs still exist, who have been blocking nominations by Obama
right.
Through the filibuster. So they basically backed off their original agreement. And without getting a filibuster proof, we're not going to change the Supreme Court. We're not going to change.
That's right. You know, we're not going to change a lot of things. We've got to get a Republican majority out of the House of Representatives and strengthen our Democratic majority, or else we're never going to get anywhere because they won't compromise. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom. I'm Carl Frisch, and Tom, we'll be back with you tomorrow. Thanks a lot. Go to carlfrisch.com and sign up for emails. It's been a pleasure. Thanks to Tom and his team. Have a good afternoon.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.